I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, and welcome to the Liverboard Sailing Podcast. I'm your host, Annika. I'm hosting this podcast because I want to learn everything that I possibly can about the sailing lifestyle, specifically about becoming a liverboard cruiser. I do this by talking to liverboard sailors as well as industry experts and find out all the essentials about boat shopping and selection, the costs of full-time sailing, and exactly how people made their dream a reality. Join me and you will get real-life advice, practical tips, and maybe you'll even avoid making some costly mistakes. After listening to these truly inspirational and hugely entertaining stories, you and I will be better prepared to start our sailing adventures. In this episode of Liverboard Sailing, I talk with a lovely couple, Ali and Ben from Breaking Waves Sailing. We cover a lot of ground on this episode, everything from buying a boat in the US as Canadians, sailing with a dog, having a YouTube channel, and also how Ali and Ben are preparing to sail south from British Columbia to Mexico once they're done exploring BC. They are full of good tips and entertaining stories, so let's just get straight to it. Ali and Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Why don't we get started by you guys just introducing yourselves briefly, where you're from, and of course, tell us about your boat, Kiana.
My name's Ali. I'm from Toronto. I was born in Oakville and moved to Toronto to grow up. And then after that, I moved to Montreal, back to Toronto, and then out to Vancouver. And then from Vancouver, I met Ben, who's on Vancouver Island, and that's where we live now.
Yeah, and I'm Ben, and I'm originally from Ontario too, even though we met in BC, from a small town called Port Elgin, which is on Lake Huron. That's where I had my first sailboat way back when, and I moved out west to BC about 7 or 8 years ago, I think, and had another sailboat in Vancouver for a little bit, and then about 2 years ago or so, Ali and I, 3 years ago, we're getting together, and a year later, we bought Kiana, which is a 1989 Scepter 41, which is a fairly reputable blue water boat from that era, built in BC. And people up in this area of the Pacific Northwest, they often find Scepters to be a very attractive boat.
So I've obviously followed your journey online for a while, and I know you bought your boat in, like you said, in the summer of 2019. I think you just mentioned about how long did it take for you guys to actually go through that process of planning. Like, when did you get the idea and how long did it take you to actually buy the boat? It sounds like it was pretty fast.
Yeah, I think like the original seed for getting into sailing at all happened to me when I was like 24 or something like that. And I watched the movie 180 South, which is a film about a guy that takes a sailboat ride from California down to Patagonia. And it's about climbing. But it's also about surfing and sailing. And so that inspired me to be interested in sailing. And then fast forward a couple boats later, I met Ali at a time when I didn't own a boat. and we were we had been dating for
you had a boat that had just burnt down.
It had just burnt down, actually.
So you
yeah.
had the ashes of a boat.
That's why I was in Vancouver, is dealing with my previous boat fire when we met. But so we got together, and and the first summer of our relationship, we decided to take a vacation together, and we chartered a little 30-foot Catalina out of Nanaimo Yacht Charters, which is our earliest episodes show that, and they're pretty amateur, but I'm kind of happy we have them now.
They're like 4 minutes long.
Yeah.
But family videos.
So I introduced Ali to sailing, and honestly, I don't think we had been, like, at that moment, we hadn't been decided that we were going to buy a boat and try to sail to Mexico or wherever. I think we knew we were interested in the idea of it. And then the following summer, about a year later, we had just been looking at boats without seriously planning to buy. And then Kiana, I had been just watching on Yacht World for like 2 years, and she was priced way higher. And then she just started coming down, like every couple of weeks she came down in price. I was like, holy crap, we should go look at this boat.
Yeah. I remember Ben showing me the boat in like February and was like, if this boat comes down to this price, we should get it. And I was like, it's never going to come down that low. Like, yeah, that's such a nice boat. And then we looked it around June and we were like, oh my God, it's down that low. Hmm. And Ben was like, we should, you know what? Like, we'll just go look at it. We're just going to look at it. Yeah.
So all said and done, it was about a year from when we went on the charter to actually owning Kiana. So the process of buying it started 3 months before that. So it was really only about 8 or 9 months.
Yeah, it was quick.
But there was never a decision to be like, we should buy a boat together. And then it happened 8 months later. It just sort of happened, I would say. It wasn't an intention.
Yeah. It was meant to be. So Kiana fell into our laps. And then we couldn't say no.
That's amazing that it just kept coming down on price just mm-hmm. to what you wanted it to be. So I'd say also, yeah, it was meant to be. Well, you're both pretty young. And I only say this because I just saw your recent post. So Ben, we're the same age. So definitely still very young.
Yeah.
So what was your financial approach on purchasing the boat? Like, did you have houses to sell, or did you take a loan? Did you save up all the money before that, or all of the above? Or what was sort of that approach on buying a boat as, you know, 30 something?
So we didn't actively save, obviously, to buy Canada based on the previous story. We decided we wanted to buy her. We hadn't put a bunch of money away. And so the decision was, it's in one of the episodes, right, when we're going to buy the boat, but I was committed at that point to selling my house. And I even made an offer on the boat contingent to the sale of my house, which the broker just laughed at me and didn't take me seriously. And so I had to have a plan B, which was I talked to my bank and I organized a line of credit that would allow me to buy the boat until I sold my house. And then I never sold my house. So we basically took a loan. It's the best way to put it.
Yeah, no, I'm actually super happy to hear that, because that's exactly the way we're hoping to do it. Like, we have a little bit more leeway. We're, you know, planning for it a couple of years out, so we're saving up money, but we don't own a house at all. We are renting. We've lived in numerous different places in different continents, so we never bought a house. So I'm super excited to hear that you've gone that route, because I've not heard a lot of people do that. So great to hear that. But I also wanted to talk about buying a boat in the U.S., because I believe Kiana was somewhere in the U.S. on the right coast, but you know, still in a different country. So how was that process like, buying a boat as Canadian citizens in the U.S.? Was that pretty easy? Was it a headache? Would you recommend doing it? Or
it was pretty easy, I would say. At the time, actually, so this was 2019, and there was a bit of a trade war going on between Canada and the States that Trump had initiated, related to steel prices and something else. And it actually caused a situation where, while we were looking for boats prior to Kiana coming way down in price the winter before that, where if you bought a boat in the States, you had to pay an additional 10% tariff that we would normally not have to pay due to NAFTA. And then NAFTA got ripped up, and they made a new agreement, and that ended up going away right around the same time we wanted to buy Kiana, which ended up kind of being the well, screw it, let's buy her, because we didn't have to come up with that additional 10% of the boat value. So that was a thing that we were dealing with, but otherwise it's pretty straightforward. Like, there's obviously the exchange rate. So the rate was not good at the time
that
we bought Kiana.
Yeah,
but that was just part of it, right? Most boats sell in US dollars, so it's always going to be that way for Canadians. And then the paperwork to transfer it from American flag to Canadian flag, I just added that to the cost of the boat with the broker, and it wasn't very expensive. I think it was like $500. And then it was pretty simple. We just, you know, we put insurance on it. We sailed it back to Canada. We registered with the port of Nanaimo,
which was super chill, by the way. We did it
from the phoned boat. We didn't even have to like show our IDs or anything. We just called them in, gave them a passport number.
Do you have any animals or alcohol? I was like, I got a golden retriever and a bottle of wine. And he's like, all right, you're good to go. I was like, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we had to register it with Transport Canada within like, I think it was, we had like a 3-month grace period or something to do that. And that was also pretty straightforward and not very expensive. And then there's the tax that you pay when you get in, and that was it. So it wasn't, it never felt to me like overwhelming. It was just sort of one step at a time, and none of it was all that difficult.
Yeah. I was expecting it to be very confusing, and very like often when I would do anything with the government, like it's gray area and you're on hold. And I thought it would be quite a headache, but it was very easy, actually. It was step by step, very clear. And
I think the service, like if you're Canadian and you're going to buy a boat in the States, I think paying the service to do the paperwork turnover, like not having to deal with the American side of the paperwork, is worth the $500, whatever we pay.
Yeah.
I would recommend doing that. I don't know how hard it would have been if we had to try to do it ourselves, but it just feels like when you're operating outside of your own country, it's just easier to let somebody else do it. And so that's what we went with, and it worked out fine.
Yeah, oh, that's great to hear. And definitely it's always a little bit, not necessarily sketchy, but scary to, you know, when you're dealing with a lot of money in a different country, even if it's as close as US, you just don't necessarily know what fees or taxes or whatever is going to pop up later. Yeah. So that's great to hear about that experience as well. So I'm always curious to hear about people's reasons for starting the sailing lifestyle. And Ali, what was your background? Did you know anything about sailing, or were you totally a newbie?
No, total newbie. I had never been on a sailboat when I met Ben. And that was, I think, one of the reasons why he chartered the boat, because he was like wanting me to get into it. And I was like, well, I don't know. Like, I went in a canoe once, but so I didn't have much of a background. And I don't really know why I got into it, I guess. I got into it because Ben was into it. And when I met him, he was quite passionate about it. And I wanted to kind of understand his passion or share in his passion, because his passion was like a life encompassing one. Like his whole life is on the ocean. He's obsessed with surfing and sailing. And I knew if I was going to be with him, I had to kind of show interest. So that's where it started. And
we also had like that first week. It was like the best week of the summer. It was August.
Heat wave.
It was a heat wave. It was sunny and hot every day, which in BC is an amazing experience on a boat. And so I feel like it was like a easy for you to get into it after that.
It's hard not to love it.
You didn't experience any like tough weather, or, you know, we had a couple things go wrong, but they were pretty minor. And
I didn't know they were minor at the time.
Yeah, I think anybody would fall in love with sailing if that was their first experience that week. It was pretty nice.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Wow, that worked out perfect then.
Yeah, it was like I fooled her real good.
And are you both kind of into traveling? You know, I mentioned Ben is into surfing as such. Is there like some sort of lust for adventure and that sort of stuff?
I think it's a combination. I think if I were to guess, I would say Ben is a little bit more into the sailing part, and I'm a little bit more into the adventure travel part. Like I'm into once we get there, and Ben's into the like, the journey.
Yeah.
If I were to guess.
I think that I'm like less on that spectrum though. Like I think the average situation is that the man usually really likes sailing, and then he convinces his partner to come along with him. But to me, like I do love sailing for sure, but it's not like, to me, it's about an adventure. It's about taking the boat to some warm water where we can surf and hopefully have surf breaks all to ourselves, which is a really hard thing to achieve, especially nowadays. Like everybody is surfing ever since COVID hit. The water is so busy and so crowded. And just having like this adventure vessel and home that can take us to places that most people can't get to very easily opens up the opportunity to have surf waves all to yourself, which is sort of like the holy grail in surfing, right? Like it's just having a warm water wave all to ourselves is really, that's the dream for me. It's not necessarily about bobbing around in the Caribbean and drinking rum. Like I don't, that'll be all fun. And I do love sailing.
Not mad about that either.
But that's not the ultimate driving force behind it all.
Well, you guys also have a dog, Bruce, that's also big star in all your videos. How's Bruce taking on the sailing?
But I'd say Bruce's favorite thing in this world is to just be with us and like be within a foot from us at all times.
Like right now.
Like right now. And I don't know if he's in love with sailing, but I think that he would always prefer to be with us than to not be. So I think he puts up with sailing in order to be with us. Even if we leave on the dinghy and he's on the deck, he'll like howl to be with us. So
yeah, I think he puts up with it pretty well. When we're actually sailing, I think he gets a little bit seasick feeling and he just ends up sleeping.
Yeah.
Which is kind of great because then he's not in the way.
Which is kind of what I do too. So I don't blame him.
But we haven't, like, admittedly, we haven't done any blue water cruising. We haven't done any overnight sails yet. I have, but not me and Allie haven't on this boat. And it will be a challenge when we get to the point of wanting to do more miles and do longer passages. And I had trained him on my older boat to pee on deck. And I'm sure we could get back to that point, but we just haven't had to yet. And so we haven't bothered. And yeah, it is like, we're talking about going south eventually. And my parents have agreed to take them for a year. If we wanted that, we'd really prefer to have
them.
If
we want that.
But I think this summer we'll be telling, like, we're going to be doing more sailing this summer and we're going to try some longer passages and we'll see how it goes. And
yeah, I think we're taking it step by step because we do have plans to go down to Mexico and we'd love to have him and I think we'll take him, but we also wonder how he'll do with the heat. So I think we're just going to try it out, see how it goes. And we do have a backup plan for Ben's parents if it doesn't work out. But
like, I think ultimately we're hoping we can bring him to Mexico so that when we eventually hopefully cross the ocean to the South Pacific, that will be the year we can say, okay, mom and dad, please take him because there's no way he's going to cross the ocean with us.
He would hate that.
Yeah. So yeah, we love having him though. Like, the stuff we've been doing so far in BC, he just enriches the whole thing, right? Like we spend every day at anchor near some sort of beautiful coastline and usually have a bonfire, usually a beach to swim. And like, he just loves it and it's fun to have him around.
Yeah, he really looks like he enjoys it. Like, I've seen he swims around a lot, and which is super nice to hear. We also have a dog who absolutely hates water. He swam exactly once in his life by accident, but he's the same. He really wants to be with us. He's a great traveler. We've traveled across the country in a car twice with him. So it's great doing road trips, and we've gone to the States with him. So I have high hopes, but
yeah,
it does definitely affect our sailing plans. So we would never go to the to South Pacific at all. Like, we'd try to get to Europe as soon as possible, just because he's very hairy dog. So also not great for Caribbean, but it's great to hear that you have a plan and you have a sort of a plan B, and it's totally doable to live in a sailboat and sail with the dog, just certain caveats, like you can't go to exactly all the countries.
You know what? I really highly, highly recommend though.
I can think of two things. Yeah. I know what you're
saying. Yeah. Like, I for sure.
Varnish your floors.
Okay. Yeah. Two really big important things. Varnish your floors, like protect your floors. We just totally ruined the teak floors inside our boat.
It's like the dog's toenails will rip up the floor of your boat.
And like ours were 30 years old and they're a little bit soft and they're beautiful when we bought the boat. And within 6 months, like they're so.
Not even 6 months.
Like I'm so discouraged by how they look now. And eventually we ended up using schooner or something or other, like some sort of protectant. And it's worked really well. And I wish we'd have just done that from the beginning. But yeah, we totally messed up our floors with the dog. And the other really important thing is having a walkthrough transom out of the cockpit. If you have a cockpit at the back of the boat, it makes getting the boat in and out of the dinghy or the dog in and out of the dinghy so much easier. Yeah. I had a Catalina 27 before with Bruce, and I would have to I'd have to physically pick him up and lower him. He's like 80 or 90 pounds. And if I had to do that as often as we do now, the amount of sailing we do now, like daily, that would be so
it's like
annoying.
Three times we take Bruce, we try to take him to shore three times a day, like once in the morning for a bathroom break, once before bed, and then a walk in the middle of the day. So if you have an 80-pound dog, anything over 40, you're doing that, lifting him on and off the boat six times a day. Like it's gonna hurt.
Yeah, walk through transom is really key, I think, to having a big dog on a boat.
Yeah, for sure. That would be a lot of lifting. And I've actually seen some dog backpacks which look absolutely hilarious. Like they look cute in a small dog, but I was seeing photos with the golden retriever in them and I'm like, okay, that's cool. That's cool.
That'd be so fun.
Well, speaking of going to Mexico and then heading further south to sort of uncharted waters and doing bigger sales that you haven't done before, how are you preparing for all of this? I mean, your plan, if I'm correct, is to sail in BC for the summer season and then heading down south in the fall. So how are you preparing for this? Obviously, you're getting the boat ready, but you know, what else is there? Is there mental preparation or logistics or whatever else?
Yeah, there's
panicking.
We do.
I think we panicked last night officially.
We have dinner. A couple panic sessions for sure.
Once in a while.
Logistics, definitely getting the boat ready. We've put a lot of effort into the boat recently. As you mentioned, we just hauled out last weekend and put a lot of time and money into the boat. But we're feeling good about the boat. But there's also the logistics of work. I think one of the things that Ben and I both have a tough time with is that because we are young, it's leaving our jobs at a time when we could be really building a nest egg. And we want to leave, but it's kind of how we're going to do it without having to sell everything so that there's a little bit of something to come back to if we were to come back. And that I think we change our minds on regularly. And I don't think we even have an answer yet
for it. Like it's the opportunity cost of, like, a lot of people that do this, they sell off everything and then they buy their boat with cash in hand and they have a kitty. And like, I've definitely thought about it and we could do that today and we could skip West Coast Vancouver Island and go straight to Mexico right now. But I spent a lot of my 20s backpacking and also working really hard, but I kind of always got back from like long stints of traveling and being like, okay, I want to stop. I want there to be like money making money for me while I'm gone, like investments and stuff like that. And so like, we're in that place now, but I don't really just want to sell everything and give that up. Like it's sort of like, I want both, which is really
don't we
maybe not how it works. I did commit to selling my house. We bought the boat and didn't, but maybe I should. But it's sort of just like, if we can have some rental income and even if that's not paying our way, as long as that mortgage is being paid off while we're gone, I'll be more at peace with sort of going off and having a big adventure and, you know, that allowing our wealth to sort of build passively while we're away. That was really important to me to be like in a position where that was going to be happening. But we don't know if we'll get there. Like, we're probably still going to sell. We have a couple of properties. We'll probably sell the house I was planning to sell when we bought the boat.
We'll probably eventually follow through on what we said.
But to the other point there, we're actually, so the timeline isn't quite correct. We're spending another year in BC. So we're going to sail from the East Coast, Vancouver Island, up to Tofino on the West Coast. Well, we're going to go the South way fairly soon, in like a month. And then we're going to spend the whole summer where we are. We're in Tofino now. This is where we live and work. And so we'll be partly living on the boat, partly living in this place, continuing to do our day jobs indefinitely or for the whole year and doing sort of like weekend adventures and then a couple of vacations. And then we're going to winter on the boat. We're going to actually move onto the boat, rent this place out fully. And that's when we're sort of like full on liveaboards until we're done the journey. And then it's going to be the following summer. So summer 2022 is when we're going to sail down to Mexico.
We bumped it back almost a full year.
Yeah. And I mean, like, we need that time. We need to re-rig the boat. We need to do quite a few projects. And we're going to do some of them here in Tofino over the summer and over the fall and winter. And then we got to go back to the East Coast of Vancouver Island or Victoria, maybe, where we can do some of the bigger projects like the re-rig and some mass work. And then like we would just leave for Mexico, let's say spring 2022, but then there's the hurricane season to consider. And so it's sort of like, we can't really get into Mexico until late 2022 anyway. So that's sort of driving that, but we're not ready this fall. We won't be ready. We just have like, if we could quit our jobs right now and focus on the boat and focus on the YouTube channel and only do that, we would be ready.
Life would be but, so much
like, easier. I'm not ready to quit my job. I don't want to quit my job yet.
Yeah.
I own my business. I can't just quit my job yet. It's not that simple for me. And so the timeline is Mexico 2022. So we got lots of time.
It's a big change. Like, it takes planning and also to make it sort of future proof so that it's not just like 6 months later, well, you're out of money and now what? So
exactly.
I totally get it. Making those plans, having a little bit of a safety net, either financial or otherwise, some sort of a home base, and doing everything in your home country before you set off, it makes total sense for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with that said, like, I'm, as long as the boat is safe, I don't need to have every single project done. Like, I'm pretty happy to MacGyver stuff down in Mexico once we get there. And like, we don't need every comfort. If something's not working, like I'm not, as long as it's safe, I'm not going to be too upset. We spent the last 2 years without even having a depth sounder. So like, which is a pretty critical piece of equipment in most people's eyes, but we just finally installed a transducer last week so that we can hook that up to our new chart plotter and have depth, which will be really, really nice. You know, as long as it's safe, like I said, as long as the boat is sound and the rigging is good, we're going to go regardless of what else needs to be done.
If you wait until your boat is ready, you'll never leave the dock.
Oh, yeah. Our project list is like 700 items. So we're not going to get it all done.
But I think the planning is financial planning, obviously boat planning and mental planning. And yeah.
I feel like I'm ignoring the mental part of it. It's just, we'll be ready when the time comes. Like,
I'm pretty much ready now.
Yeah. Like, are we skilled? Are we skilled enough to do the sail down? I don't know.
Probably not,
but we're going to do it anyway.
But the fastest way to learn is by trial and error.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, you mentioned that you own your own business, and I know from having followed your videos that you are sometimes sailing in BC in sort of search of Wi-Fi, trying to find a good spot where you can get some work done. So how's that been working? And if you don't mind sharing, what is it that you do for a living, and how's that been to do that from a boat, at least a part of the time?
Yeah, so Ali's was a flight attendant, and that sort of went by the wayside when COVID came around this time last year. Which, I mean, I think a lot of people have these stories of COVID being, there's a lot of silver linings. And for sure, for us,
mine was great.
It made it possible for us, because I was now able to work remotely, which wasn't really a thing prior to COVID for me. So all of a sudden, we owned and lived on this boat. Ali was laid off, and I could work from anywhere. So we were able to spend almost all of last summer like cruising around and enjoying boat life. And it was like the first taste of like, oh my God, this is what it's like to be a digital nomad. This is what it's like to be like one of the big YouTube channels that just do this and work from their boat everywhere they go. And it was super liberating and pretty easy to do, other than finding good cell coverage in BC is tough because of the mountains. They often, it's harder, I think, to find good cell coverage in BC than it would be in, let's say, Mexico or something like that.
I think we sometimes picked anchorages that were a little weird and that, not many people would normally go for, or we would pick like the entrance of an anchorage where it's like less protected from wind because it had more service. So we sometimes ended up where we wouldn't normally, but it worked. Like it was, I would still do that and have some money that I could spend on the boat and spend on our adventures than go to the best anchorage in the back corner and be tight financially for all of our trips.
I mean, like in an ideal world, we would have all the money we'd ever need, win the lottery or whatever, and just cruise exactly how we felt like cruising every day. But it kind of adds like a bit of an adventure to the whole thing when you have to be somewhere on Monday morning where there is cell coverage. And like,
because then instead of like not sailing through the heavy weather, you're like, well, we have to. So you have more adventure because you push yourself a little bit more.
Yeah. So overall, like, yeah, I really liked, we got to experience living on a boat while working and really, really enjoyed the experience. We spent the winter living here on land with the boat at the dock, but I'm looking forward to getting back to continuing to work. I don't plan to leave my business. I have two business partners, and you asked what I do. So I develop clean energy projects for First Nations communities all throughout British Columbia. So just small scale run of river hydro, solar, there's some ocean energy stuff we're doing, geothermal, pretty much anything non-carbon usually on quite a small scale in a remote community. And that can be done mostly for me over the phone and over Zoom and over Skype and that kind of stuff. I do have project sites that I need to visit once in a while, and we're going to visit a bunch of them this summer.
We're going to take the boat to one of them.
Yeah, a bunch of my projects are on the coast, the remote coastal communities. But yeah, I can keep doing that. And I've already agreed with my partners that I was going to take a year off. And now I'm actually wondering if I actually can just keep working during that sail down to Mexico, maybe South Pacific. And do I really need to take the year off, or maybe just take 6 months of it off and check in once a week or something like that? Because, you know, as a business owner, I'm very invested in it, and it's going to be hard to, like, if I wasn't just to leave the company altogether and sell my stake in it, it would be kind of hard to just leave it and not know what's going on. And so I'm going to want to be in touch. I'm going to want to have input on things like big changes and decisions. So yeah, it's interesting how things have evolved, that things are being done remotely. Our company is mostly entirely remotely now, very flexible situation. And it would be interesting to see how it works for us as we head down south.
Yeah, well, that was going to be one of my next questions, whether you're hoping to do that as you move south, because you're right, a lot has changed with COVID, and not all for the worse. Also, it has shown basically the whole world that almost anything can be done remotely. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be hard to justify, like, no, you have to be here at the office where I can see you working.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. And I imagine, Ben, for you, owning your own business is definitely different than working for somebody else, because you're not going to just be like, all right, sayonara, boss, I'm off.
Yeah,
now.
Totally. If I was an employee, the calendar would be marked and I'd be ready to sever ties for sure. But yeah, no, I like what I do. I like my business and my partners, and I don't want to have to like burn that bridge. And so we'll see how it goes. Yeah. Ultimately, if things went really, really well for us with the YouTube channel, and if it became so lucrative, that would be kind of like crazy not to leave that all behind. Then obviously that would be a decision we would have to make. But until we're confronted with that type of decision, you know, I'm intending to maintain my position in my company and keep working. And even if we're sort of imagining a loop, like we're going to do Mexico, South Pacific, and back up to Canada. And if that happens over the course of longer than most people would take to do it so that I can continue to work, then that might be the path
then
we go
so
with.
So be it.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with slow travel, guys.
Yeah.
and Ali, is your focus now on the YouTube channel mostly, or are you working on some other stuff as well on the while you're sort of getting ready to make the big change and move full time on the boat?
Yeah, I am back at work. I go crazy if I'm not doing something. So I got a job here in Tofino at a hotel. Interesting enough, it's actually owned by First Nations that Ben also works with. So I work there right now, but I work 4 days, 4 10-hour days. And then on my Fridays, I spend my whole Friday 9 to 5 working on Breaking Waves and on the YouTube channel and building it and the Instagram and the Patreon aspect. There is a lot of work there. So I feel like the bigger we get, the more that could be a full-time job. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we're only doing 2 videos a month right now. If we were to go to a video every week, which is, it's kind of necessary, I think, in YouTube world to eventually get to a weekly video to really grow. And you just wouldn't be able to work. Like you'd have to only do Breaking Waves. It's so much work to produce one video that it's basically a 3 to 4 day a week job.
Yeah. I'm the fastest at editing that I've been. And it still takes me two like full 8 to 10-hour days to put a video together. And then after that, there's the promoting and the social media marketing and the digital media marketing that also takes about another day and a half or even more. It's just constant. So it is a lot of work. I don't have many, I'd say, career goals that I'm gunning for that I can't leave. Like Ben obviously loves his career and his position, and I feel a little bit more free from that world. I'm fine to work on YouTube and do that. So
one of my favorite qualities in Allie when I met her was that she's not a careerist.
Lifeist.
I feel like a relationship where both people are really focused on their careers is going to result in a rat racy life. You know?
Yeah.
Like you need to have the flexibility. And not that I want you to work and I want you to like be happy with what you're working on and all that kind of stuff. But I just think if your career was as taxing on you as mine is on me, we would probably not get along very well.
Yeah. Well, I never would have moved to Vancouver Island if...
Yeah.
I don't even know if we'd be together if my career took priority, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's it makes a difference for sure on what kind of personalities and what sort of goals people have individually as well to make them work together as a couple, especially when you're planning to do something adventurous. I was going to say about the YouTube that there's definitely a lot of examples out there that it is possible to make a living, at least enough to support the sailing lifestyle. But yeah, it absolutely takes a huge amount of work on editing, and not just editing, but even the filming. Like, you must be very time consuming to do that and think about that and plan all that and then push it out later on. So I can imagine that it absolutely keeps you guys busy. But
But it's like, it's so fun that it doesn't feel as much like work like the rest of my work does. Like, it's
a different,
definitely
kind
a passion.
It's a different kind of work, I think.
Yeah, whether it's paying the bills or not, like, it's still fun to do. And it does open up interesting opportunities and interesting connections like this, for example. All sorts of friends. I think all the friends we've made in the past year have all been other sailing couples. Like, it's neat what the kind of things that it opens up. And so not just about the money. There's a lot more to it than that, for sure.
And the community and the support that we're finding that we get from YouTube. Like, even we were in on the hard the other day and we were posting. So obviously our location was known, and we had like viewers stop by to bring us coffees and just chat with us. And it was so cool. And then whenever we have problems, like, we can always kind of message our Patreon group. And there is such a wealth of knowledge in that Patreon group. People have been sailing for years. And so the connections we've made solely because we're on YouTube has been incredible and invaluable.
I'm not afraid to admit it either. We both love being recognized. We don't have a very big channel. We're comparative to some of the big ones. We're tiny, but we do have enough of a following that it's probably happened like 10 or 12 times. Like, been like, hey, breaking waves or whatever. Yeah. Right. And like, it's like, it feels so cool to be recognized.
It always freaks me out at first. I'm like, why are they staring at me?
But I don't know. I'm not at all ashamed to admit that I love it. It just pumps up my ego so much.
That's probably good quality for if we want to be on YouTube. Yeah, so totally. That's perfect.
I'm actually such a private person normally, but for some reason,
Ben is such
YouTube,
an introvert.
I like, don't mind. I think partly because it's delayed. Like, when we're putting out an episode, it's usually a few weeks to a few months away from real time. And so it doesn't feel like I'm, if I had to live live that openly, I would hate it, but it's always lagged, right?
Yeah.
All right. So no live stream 24/7.
Maybe not 24/7 anyway.
Oh, that would be awful.
Yeah.
No, I think you guys are doing really good job with the videos. I followed you since the beginning, or not timeline since the beginning, but I've seen all your videos. I could definitely see the development. It's been huge. And I mean, your channel is growing a lot. So congrats on that. Obviously, it's showing that you're doing a good job. So I look forward to seeing you grow it even more and hopefully making that at least a part of your income. So, So you've now been boat owners for a year and a half or so with the current boat, both of you. So is there something that's surprised you about the either being a boat owner or the sort of sailing live aboard-ish lifestyle in general?
Surprise. I feel like because I had nothing, like no kind of information to start with, I don't know if I would say I was surprised by anything, because I really had no expectations. So for me to be surprised would be for me to think that it was different than what I was expecting. But I have learned so much so fast. And I think what I wasn't prepared for when we bought the boat was the commitment, I think, that living on a boat takes, especially when you are working while living on a boat. It's one thing to just walk around barefoot on your boat and like live on a boat every day, and that's fine. But when you have to have like, when you're having to work while living on a boat, is it really does take commitment and commitment to finding solutions. Like, I worked in an industry where I had 3 suitcases, 17 uniforms and 4 pairs of shoes. And it's like, where are you going to put that when you're on a boat? Space was definitely an issue. Winter on a boat with mold and like navigating that, I think It took commitment, because you had to want it.
Winter on a boat in BC is hard. Like, I find winter hard enough as it is, just because it rains all the time and it's dark.
It's dark
and gray. Even living in a house, it's hard, but it definitely amplifies it.
You lose half your living space. Like, you don't go outside. So you just stay inside, and your inside is 2 rooms. Like, one.
It's also very romantic. Like, it's like you turn on your little gas stove and, you know, like, it's a little fort and you're protected. It's totally warm and cozy.
Yeah.
And it's cool, but I think it just, whether or not you're going to work as a sailing couple and as a liveaboard team, I think if you live through the winter on a boat, you're going to find out pretty fast.
Yeah. If you can make it through winter, you can, on a boat in BC, you can make it through anything.
Yeah. And I think I was mostly surprised by, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but I was a little bit naive. Like my previous two boats, I don't come from a lot of sailing experience for sure. I just kind of like owned a couple small boats, taught myself how to sail, screwed around on them and had some fun. I didn't really have a good eye for like what a boat that's in really good shape looks like. And I knew Kiana, I knew Scepters were well-built blue water reputable boats. So I knew that much, but and I had a really well done survey done too, but I think I went into buying Kiana with like a little bit of wool over my eyes and kind of believed that all she really needed was to be re-rigged and that otherwise all the systems worked and it's, you know, had to maintain them, upgrade them a little bit over time. But you know, a year and a half in, I think we're realizing that it's a bit more of a refit. Like pretty much every system, if it hasn't already broke because it's so old, it's probably just about to.
And so, or you have a girlfriend who's going to break it for you.
Yeah. But we're working through basically. I don't think there's a single system that we're not going to end up replacing at some point on this boat within the next year or two. We've already done a lot of it, but we have a lot more to go. And so that was a surprise to me that I bought a boat that I thought was in a little bit better shape than it actually was. And it was really no one's fault other than my own. Like I just wanted it to be my dream boat and it is, but it just needs quite a bit more work and, you know, time and money. And yeah, I don't think I realized what commitment I was making at the time financially to the boat.
Okay, Ali, I'm hanging on to your comment. What have you broken on the boat?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
What hasn't she broken?
I think this is a ridiculous story, but I think the first thing I ever broke on the boat was the inverter charger that we had.
Yeah. That was like day one.
It was like, Ben was so mad. It was like 2 days on our brand new boat, and
you can't drink drip coffee. You just got to have an Americano.
It's a little bit embarrassing, but I had an espresso maker and I was like, this works really well on a boat. We can just plug it in. Ben, watch, I'll make us an Americano. And it smelled like burnt toast. And there was like a click, 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 click. And I'm like, that doesn't sound
It didn't screw the inverter. I think it hurt our batteries. It was an old school inverter. Eventually the inverter died.
Oh, but fried it.
We knew so little about the electrical system on the boat at that time that we thought we might have
and something. I didn't know what I didn't know. So yeah. I had no way to know that that wouldn't be okay. So there was that. And then this isn't an episode too, but then I put a heater. There's mold in my clothes and I was having to go to work and there was mold growing on my clothes and they were damp. So I was like, I'll just put a heater in my closet and take Bruce for a half an hour walk and come back. But what I didn't know was the septic tank was in beside my closet. So
yeah, the holding tank.
Oh yeah, the holding tank for our toilet. So I heated it up with the heater and it expanded. We come back and we're like, oh my God, what is that smell? This boat is rancid. It literally smelled like shit. Sorry for my language, but it was like, it was about to explode and it was leaking. It was really gross.
Yeah, it's a rectangular holding tank made out of plastic that looked like a football.
It was so rounded
out. And I don't understand how it didn't just like totally explode. All that happened is the port on the top, there was a bit of crap like seeping
leaking
from that. But we're lucky if it had gotten a little bit hotter, I feel like the whole thing would have just blown up.
Yeah, I think like 20 more minutes, 15 more minutes yeah. of us walking Bruce and they probably would have blown up and there would have been an
explosion. Yeah, but we just took the heat off and it slowly, you know, went back to its normal shape. And then
we've sort of
dealt with sealing off that port.
I wrapped it in duct tape.
Yeah, that's probably one of the projects that we need to address.
I was like, don't worry, we'll fix it.
Yeah, that's still the status of the holding tank. So.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Good to know. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought about that either. And I'm so sad about the coffee because we're serious coffee drinkers. We have an espresso machine at home and we're already talking about like, we can't have this on the boat. When do we start?
Yeah. You get AeroPress though. You can still make espresso on a boat. It has to be different.
You can also just like, nowadays the inverters are capable of running espresso machines.
Probably.
If you get a big enough inverter, it's not an issue. But that is a good tip though. If you're thinking about moving onto a boat with a partner, I think like if you're like me and you've got a little bit more experience with the boat than your partner does, you need to remember that like everything about moving onto this boat is going to be foreign and new. And like we had to have a few pep talks. Like there were some tears in the early days just because like simple things like that, like the holding tank that, you know, it wasn't unreasonable to want to dry out your closet with a little passive heater that we had on board. And of course, Ali would have no idea that that's where the the holding tank is. And I think as a couple moving onto a small space like this, where everything is new, you need to be ready for like some challenging.
Yeah.
I'd say in the first 3 or 4 months, there's going to be some challenges just adjusting to that.
Your learning curves are going to look different.
And I think if you're the one that has more of the experience, you need to like try to remember what it was like to not know how anything works on a boat and how foreign that can all be. So yeah, there was some tough, none of that really ended up on YouTube, I don't think, but there was a few blowouts, I'd say.
Well, that was going to be my next question in general. Like, is there something you wish you had known? But it certainly sounds like, yeah, there are some things that you wish you had known before you got started with this whole sailing lifestyle. But I guess it is hard to know what to expect when you just don't really know what it might be. So,
yeah, you don't know what you don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, you just got to go easy on yourself, right? Like, there's going to be a million challenges along the way. So take them all in stride. Try not to get too upset when everything breaks, because everything will break if you're going to buy an older boat. Just get ready for that. And also take it as an opportunity. Like every time something breaks, it's sort of just, I find anyway, it's hard to get focused on learning how, you have to acquire a lot of skills, right, to upgrade your boat. And the only time I actually acquire those skills is when I'm forced to fix something, because it's like broken and we need it to work. And then I'm like, I'll research the crap out of it. I'll figure out what to do. I'll just jump into it and start fixing the problem. And otherwise, I'm just slow to actually like take on new challenges on the boat. But, you know, every time something breaks for us anyway, or goes wrong, you can look at it. We could look at it in two ways. One, it could make good content for the YouTube channel. So that could be exciting.
Yeah. The YouTube channel really helps.
And secondly, for me, it's kind of like, well, now at least I'm going to fix this. That I like the thing that I kind of knew I wanted to upgrade anyway. It's like, well, I got no choice. So you just got to learn how to look at things a little bit differently, I think, if you're going to make it as a liveaboard.
Yeah, you've already given me so many good tips and tidbits of advice, but since you are a couple of steps ahead of us, I'm wondering whether you have any sort of words of wisdom, final advice or warnings or whatever you want to part with.
My head is just in the sort of in the techie space right now, like about fixing your boat and all that. I do think advice would be always try to attempt as much of the work. Like you're going to have to do a bunch of boat work. You're going to have to do a bunch of projects. And always try to at least attempt it yourself until you don't know what you're doing, and then bring in the help. I think that's important, because even if you attempt it and you fail, you probably still pick something up and you probably learn something. And you might have picked up a tool that you wouldn't otherwise have on the boat. And then someday in a couple of years in the Caribbean or wherever, you're going to need that tool and you're going to be glad you have it. So yeah, I think trying to be as self-sufficient as possible. And I'm still working on that. Like I do pay for help. We're about to pay for help from an electrician. Electrical is really where I'm not confident. And I'm like one project at a time, right? An example was our shore power cord recently almost burnt down this boat too.
Yeah.
And we had to replace it.
We're a little bit nervous with electrical.
Yeah, I don't have a good electrical foundation, but
the stakes are so high if you're wrong. Like Ben's previous boat and our electrical cord this time around, like that's really not something you want to get wrong.
But I fixed that and I felt accomplished because I actually did an electrical project on my boat. And I think the advice is try to do as much of it as you can, bring in the pros when you feel really not confident. And then over time, your skills will start. Like I feel more confident on the engine now. I'm taking baby steps with electrical, and just everything is like that on the boat. If you just try to slowly accumulate these skills, then eventually you'll have a lot of them and you'll be glad you did, I think. Don't try to do it all at once because it's kind of overwhelming.
Well, as stressful and overwhelming as that might sound, it must be a nice sort of sense of achievement at the end of it when you actually manage to fix something yourself and you learn something new and learned how to do it.
Totally. Yeah.
And you're like, whoa.
I'll be the most excited when we upgrade something by choice rather than fix something that broke.
I can't imagine.
Whenever that happens, that means we'll be ahead of things a little bit.
That's way.
We could be there. We're doing the chart plotter. This is like the first upgrade, although arguably it's fixing the instruments that are broken. But yeah.
Well, you are getting there.
Yeah, bit by bit.
Well, just to wrap this up, do tell everybody where we can follow your adventure as you go along in BC and further afield.
You can check us out on YouTube as Breaking Waves Sailing. We're also on Instagram as breakingwaves.sailing. So you can check us out there. Facebook, Patreon as well.
We're probably, other than YouTube, we're the most active, I would say, on Instagram. But any of the main social medias, Breaking Waves Sailing.
A massive thank you to Ali and Ben for sharing their experience. And of course, thank you for listening.
New episodes of the Liverboard Sailing Podcast come out every Wednesday, and I'd love it if you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or Google Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen to your podcasts. Tune in next Wednesday for yet another inspirational and educational episode.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.